The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
This is Amanda LaPlante, and you're listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRHLP 92.9 FM, and we are back with Lindsay Walden, LPC, Certified Sex Therapist, Life Coach, and Business and Media Consultant. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, it's always great to have you. And so for anyone that missed the first episode, if you're listening, soundcloud.com/getrealtoheal, you're going to want to go tag back and listen to the previous episode with Lindsay. She shared some great insights on self-care and her private practice. We talked about the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. That's really where we left off.
That's right. Yeah, we were kind of in the midst of that whole conversation.
Yeah, we kind of jumped around quite a bit. You shared a lot of really useful information and good nuggets. So let's pick back up where we left off. So
Absolutely.
We're talking about Me Too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, and I have my own Me Too story.
Right.
And I want to ask you, a couple of things here. First, let's have a little more fun with it than that, right?
Let's
lighten it up and then we'll dive deep again.
Okay.
But so you're a sex therapist, right?
I am. I am
you
indeed.
You get that question a lot.
I do. It's funny. Either people don't know what that means, or I get the, you're a sex therapist. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
And I'm fine with either of those because I don't mind educating about what these topics actually mean. So, essentially, you're going to ask me what it is probably,
what
right?
What does a sex therapist do?
So essentially, sex therapy is just a very specialized form of cognitive behavioral therapy. And sometimes it's applied to couples and other times it's just sort of individual therapy. It really does cover a wide range of topics, everything from the sexual trauma and abuse and healing, like we were discussing in the previous episode, as well as things like sexual functioning, sexual dysfunction, difficulty sort of with desire, figuring out what is going on if one person has a really high drive or desire for sexuality or sexual response in a relationship, and maybe the another person in that relationship is not feeling quite so fond of it. Honestly, at the core, I help people learn how to talk about their sexual topics that are important to them, and figuring out what that communication looks like, both in a relationship and sometimes just individually.
And that is so tough. And why is it so tough for us to talk about sex?
I honestly think it's one of those topics that, I go to school to be a therapist, you go to school to be a health coach, even being a radio person, you've got to have some certification and knowledge of how to work certain things. You may go to a training class or whatever. There's really no class out there that's kind of designed for, hey, how do you have good sex life? How do you have good sexual response? How do you understand yourself as a sexual being?
You mean the classes and the way that they talk about that in fifth grade through middle school isn't doing it for us?
I don't think it is, really. I don't think it's giving the full range of things. I mean, yes, some of the medical stuff is covered. I'm not saying it's not, but in terms of how that is then applied to an adult mindset or even to just a, later teenage mindset is sometimes missing in the whole dynamic. And so just because the mechanics of the sexual response generally work when things are played with, we'll say, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're getting a fulfillment from it or that we're understanding what our sexual template looks like or what the full range of what we're wanting or needing out of our sexual relationships, both with a partner or on our own. We don't always have a really good, vocabulary or knowledge, or even, we don't necessarily go to dinner with friends and then immediately start talking about our sexual problems. That's not really how that works normally.
Wouldn't that be an interesting dinner conversation?
Well, it probably does happen with me because people will bring that kind of stuff up. But in the general sense, that's not really, I think, the way that our society works. It's sort of looked at as a taboo topic. And I mean, I've even, talked to other therapists that are like, I could not deal with sex in my office. I could not handle that, And I totally get it. Not everybody is comfortable with it. And so I'm not suggesting it should be that everyone feels this level of comfort with it. I think for me is that I used to joke that I grew up in kind of an abstinence-only state, and so there wasn't a lot of, like, comprehensive sexual education other than, like, the health side of things. And I would joke that I felt like I missed a day of school, which, like, never happened. So clearly I must have missed a day of school where everyone learned all of the answers to the questions, and I didn't have any of them. So I became a sex therapist to answer my own questions. And I think by association of doing that, realized that there really is a need for these types of conversations to occur. And the more that we, the more that I got into it, the more I realized that there's definitely a need for this.
Okay. And I'm a mom to a 12-year-old boy.
Okay.
Boy, that's awkward.
Yeah, I can see that.
So the thing is, though, I want to make sure, you know, and I think as parents, we all want to make sure that our kids grow up to have healthy and fulfilling sex lives.
Yes.
Hopefully in strong relationships.
Absolutely, yeah.
How do we start them off? And how do we have that conversation starting from a young age when it's a little awkward to even, you know?
I think this is where I really encourage people not to think of it as like one conversation, but rather to think of it as like a lifetime of conversation. You know, if they ask a question when they're 3 years old, you don't necessarily go into the medicalization of it, but you answer it in an age-appropriate way. Really, it's about setting up an environment where kids feel comfortable to come to you, or that even if they are uncomfortable with the topic, they know that you're comfortable with the topic. So you're sort of teaching or leading by your own example of what your comfort level looks like.
And you just helped me so much because the perfectionist in me, right? And then the fact that it's always presented as, have you had the talk with your kids yet?
Right.
That feels like such a monumental thing, like this moment, you know?
And if you don't get it right, oh my God.
Am I going to screw this up?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that I think it's okay for parents to show that they may not have all of the answers, but hey, I don't know the answer to that question, but I'll find it out for you. Or just kind of continuing to bring up the topic, because a lot of times if parents are waiting for their preteen, teenager to bring up the topic, it's likely not to happen from that side of things. And I have a lot of parents that'll say, but I don't want to make them uncomfortable. Well, you know, that's okay though. You can make them uncomfortable now, because if that means a lifetime of comfort going forward, wouldn't that be worth it? Wouldn't that be okay? And I think that's sort of what we look for, is how do we start to have more conversations rather than one talk about things from an age-appropriate sort of situation?
Well, and I will say, as a mom, how do I have that conversation with him without... Okay, we want to encourage healthy sexual relationships, right? And, and a healthy outlook on sex. Sex positive.
Right.
However, I also don't want to encourage sex as a mom.
Yeah. And here's what's interesting about that. I think this is a huge concern of a lot of parents, that if I have that conversation, is that going to make them feel like they can go out and do it? And the truth of the matter is, if they're going to go out and do it, they're going to go out and do it regardless.
Anyway.
Yeah. So what we would rather have is educated people going out and doing it than not educated. But what the data actually shows is that when people are given age-appropriate and comprehensive information, they actually prolong their entry into the sexual world, that it actually sort of staves off some of that curiosity, because now they're not going to explore with someone to answer their questions because they've already had those questions answered.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's a little counterintuitive to what the brain would think. That's why I think a lot of parents sort of struggle with that. But it absolutely is that the more information and education is given, the less likely people are to engage at a much earlier age. It actually kind of prolongs that some.
So when are you coming over for dinner at my house?
Whenever you would like. Let's do it, right? Let's do it. I have diagrams and charts and all kinds of things. No, but I do think, you know, that the more we're able to sort of have that ongoing conversation, the better. A great example, I had a client that was talking about that, and I don't remember where this came from, but basically they were at a stoplight, and the van next to them had like a video camera that was, or like a video like in the van that was like showing sexually explicit information or sexually, well, I don't know what it was, porn of some kind.
Whoa.
And the daughter, every time they would be at that stoplight, would be like, Mom, do you remember that time that we stopped at the stoplight? And it's sort of like, because kids, they get fixated on things, not because they're thinking of it in a sexual way, but they're thinking of it more in a curiosity way. And so the more that we cannot shame, and we can sort of allow them exploration into, oh, so this is this part, this is that part. Let's talk about what these things are rather than feeling like we can't go there, because we teach our kids how to treat sex by how we treat it. And if we're shameful and giggly and uncomfortable and we don't know how to talk about it, then we're going to sort of pass that on without meaning to, which is why I think it's okay to be like, look, I don't know. That is a little uncomfortable. Let's just call it what it is, but let's talk about it, you know?
I think that's good advice for sure. Yeah. Now, okay. All right. So then the other thing is, right, how much, I've always kind of wondered, like, okay, how much should I be letting my child know about, mm-hmm. I don't know, my own, right? Like, I talk about being part of the Me Too movement, yeah. right? And the fact that I was date raped mm-hmm. by actually a really close friend
yeah.
when I was 19, 20. And it's been interesting exploring that in, you know, in trauma therapy over the last couple of years mm-hmm. and realizing the myriad of ways that that's impacted every single relationship in
Absolutely.
My life, not to mention the one with myself.
Right.
So, yeah, talk to me. Mm-hmm. you know, my son actually, once he figures that out, right, mm-hmm. it's out there for the world.
Because sure.
I feel it's important to share the
right,
stories.
Right.
And be, but, you know, it's like, oh, man, it's kind of hard to think about your kid seeing you mm-hmm. that way.
Yeah.
Right?
And
I
get that. I think that the idea of vulnerability, though, is not a bad thing to show and to model. Because I think if we're wanting to raise not just kids in general, but boys into men that understand that it is not okay to use whatever, you know, they are, whoever they are, against someone else, against their will, I think that's an important lesson to learn. And I think the ability to share your story and for them to see that, I can only see that having beneficial, you know, implications going forward. But I also think, yeah, they may have questions, you know, and they may be angry. They may be like almost sort of like, well, I don't like this person. I want to go after them, you know, that kind of thing. And I think it's about letting them experience those feelings without feeling like they have to, you know, do something with them other than, well, this is why you educate, this is why I share, and sort of leading by example in that way, I think, is really the answer.
So doubling back to that whole issue,
yeah.
right? Like the sexual abuse, sexual mm-hmm. trauma, things like that, and how it does impact people in their relationships and their
yeah.
lives. How can it be impacting someone that maybe hasn't addressed these things mm-hmm. that they might not even realize is associated?
Sure. I think really what happens is that a lot of times when abuse or trauma like that occurs, people tend to sort of fragment that part of themselves and kind of push it way, way deep down and feel like, okay, I've locked it away. It's not hurting anything. And the truth is that it sort of seeps out. Whatever that box we locked it in, it doesn't really stay completely sealed because it does permeate everything that we're doing. And so by no means am I suggesting that we should, you know, rip that stuff out and just dig into it all at one time and sort of throw it all out there, because that's not what I mean by start where you are and do what you can. What I really mean is that we have to slowly start to reintegrate ourselves. And in some cases, it might be about reclaiming our sexuality. In some cases, it might be about claiming it for the first time. In some cases, it might be that we have subverted those feelings and they have sort of presented themselves with addiction or, you know, maybe acting out in a sexual way or not allowing ourselves to fully be real and vulnerable in a relationship. And so that is the reason that I think therapy is so helpful, because it allows a very non-judgmental space that is safe to explore all of those feelings without feeling like you have to rush through it, you know, that it takes it at your pace.
Well, and it was so interesting to see how things just slowly but surely started bubbling up to the surface.
Yep.
You know, it took
Absolutely.
Years.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times what happens is that there's this sort of, I think, maybe like Hollywood societal idea that, you know, the rapist or the, you know, the abuser is going to be the creepy person in the corner that smells funny. And that's not really the reality. I mean, yes, there are some examples of like stranger examples like that, but the majority of traumatic rape type situations that occur within intimate relationships or with someone that you do know or that you do feel is a trusted person or someone that you should be safe with. And so I think that's also part of the reason that the more we talk about it and the more we give sort of like a platform to discuss it, the easier it becomes to recognize, oh, okay, so this is sort of happening in a different way than we might have been led to believe originally.
For people who might be in one of those relationships where they're starting to be taken advantage of, or they're in an abusive situation and maybe they don't recognize it, where do you even start with that conversation?
Yeah, I think a lot of times what happens is that we have to sort of start almost like reverse engineering the process, you know, recognizing that most people don't go on a first date and get punched in the face. That's usually not the way that it happens. It sort of ratchets up slowly. And so it might be that you go on a first date and it seems fine, and you go on a second date and it feels like, you know, I don't like it when you wear, do we have technology problems?
Oh, that's funny. Technology problems.
You know, like it may say something.
Not on your end. Yeah, we're
good. It may say something like, you know, I don't like it when you wear that color. I don't like it. People in the bar are looking at you. That's an example of some controlling behavior that may or may not actually present itself in a sexual or a violent manner, but it is worth at least recognizing those red flags. And I think what happens is that we give people permission to actually start owning their boundaries and sort of showing up in a way that says, I am going to have like standards of how I sort of demand to be treated. And not in a way where I'm arrogant and haughty about it, but where I am very particular and specific about what is and isn't okay for me. If you find yourself in a situation where you think, wow, I really am being controlled a lot, sometimes it is about maybe going to therapy as a couple. Sometimes it is about having to get away from that situation. And it really does depend on each individual situation. It's not like everybody is the same. You know, we have to kind of meet people where they are.
So talk to me about couples therapy. My husband and I have been in couples therapy for the last several months, almost a year, and it's been really transformative. It's been great for us. Just, you know, even just in getting down to having more of a solid foundation in terms of who we are as a couple, as a family, and in the community, right? Just values.
Right.
But talk to me about couples therapy and you know, where that process starts. I know you said it's different for everyone, but...
It is, yeah. I think, honestly, people land in couples therapy for all variety of reasons. Sometimes it is a sexual issue. Other times, it's just that they are really struggling to communicate or they're not on the same page. The way I look at couples therapy is that whole same page idea, sometimes we're not even in the same book. Sometimes we're not in the same library. Sometimes we are in very different states. Like, we have to sort of figure out exactly where we're starting and then figuring out how to work our way back to a central point where we can at least understand the other one and not feel like we're trying to, you just like yell over each other. A big key that I find a lot of times is that people are almost in a relationship communication setting. They are listening to the other person, but not really. They're just waiting for them to shut up so that they can say what they want to say. And that's not active listening. And so a lot of the beginning stages of couples therapy, regardless of, you know, what the presenting reason is figuring out what does communication look like? And then how do we sort of break down the topics that are important to us and sort of sit down and start hearing and actively listening to what the other one is needing and wanting and saying? Because as people, we change and grow every day. And if we aren't doing that within our relationship together, we will inevitably sort of grow apart. And then sometimes we have to hit a stop button and kind of reset and figure out how to kind of relearn each other again.
Yeah. And I liked what you had said in a previous conversation that you and I had. It really stuck out to me. You said, you know, when people are on the couch, there's two people's, listen to me,
two people
on the couch. But the relationship is
yes.
the client.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's about trying to figure out what does this relationship need? Is there an issue that's causing the relationship energy to not quite be in sync with the other one? And if so, not taking sides, but rather trying to almost be a bit of a referee in between people and sort of being like, okay, was that really what you mean? Are you actually saying what you mean and meaning what you say? Or are your hurt feelings getting in the way of your ability to actually communicate what's going on? And so a lot of times it is about trying to reframe things or to sort of reset and sort of ask, okay, so what would be needed right now for you to hear heard and for you to be heard and listened to, or to feel heard and listened to? And the more that we can sort of get on that same page, the more, I guess, the communication starts to flow, as well as the relationship energy kind of grows.
I know for our relationship, one of the reasons that we landed on the couch was that we kept having the same four arguments over and over.
Yep. That happens all the time. It's sort of like, you know, they start fighting about who's going to take the trash out. And it's not really about that. It's about the roots of the situation. It's about what's deeper and underneath all of that, where the actual core needs aren't being met. A lot of times I have people go and take the online love languages quiz to sort of get at least an understanding of how do they best give and receive love. It's not a cure-all for everything, but it at least gives us a starting point of what is it that's going to make me feel love? What is it that's going to make you feel love? And how do we start to communicate in a way where we're not missing some of the messages along the way and that we're also tending to what the other one is needing?
So talk a little bit more about the love languages quiz. I love
that. Sure. So the love languages, there's basically Gary Chapman has this book that he's written, and there's essentially five that he identifies. We've got physical touch, acts of service, gifts, words of affirmation, and quality time. And essentially figuring out, is it possible that your partner goes out and mows the yard and then comes in and puts his feet on the coffee table and you're freaking out because he's getting grass all over the place and he's like, look, I did this for you, act of service, check out what I did. And, you know, but the problem with that is that if we're not familiar with how we're giving and receiving love in the relationship, we could be missing a lot of those messages. Now, instead of being grateful that he did that, you're yelling at the fact that he's getting grass everywhere and he feels like his whole service is being completely like, you know, squished and it doesn't even matter.
It's as if you were at my house when this happened. So
yep. I'm fascinated. This has occurred. Yeah.
Yes, this has actually occurred. Right. And then he felt so unappreciated because he's like, oh, I mean, it just squashed his ego.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, and then now I realize that.
Yeah, that like that's not what you're trying to do. But at the same time, that's sort of what happens inadvertently. And then when the feelings start to get hurt and we're only reacting from the hurt part of ourselves, we're not able to have any perspective into the other one's point of view. And so a lot of times it is about trying to get some empathy involved and be like, well, what if I put myself in their shoes? What is it that they're trying to communicate to me? And how can I hear this differently than a negative?
And you've got an amazing story with your, so you're recently divorced.
I am. Yeah. Well, I say recently, we've been officially separated since mid kind of 2013, but it's been like a journey to sort of figure out not just myself, but also how he and I were able to kind of heal the part of our relationship because we were best friends and losing that was very difficult. And now we've actually been able in our divorce to kind of continue as he's one of my best friends and we talk every day. And
you're writing a book together.
We're writing a book together. Yeah, we're going to essentially, I think that what we're going to do is we're going to go through and kind of have my perspective on things that have happened throughout our relationship and his perspective, and then we're going to sort of have some kind of combined, like, I guess, understanding of what occurred. He's also a therapist. He is not practicing any longer. He's actually an artist in the St. Louis area and does a lot with charities and kind of, you know, using his art for good. But we are going to kind of team up on this and figure out a way to maybe use our story to help other people see that it is possible to not only not continue as a relationship, but to still maintain that underlying base friendship that really, I think, should be there in all relationships. That we have to have something that ties us together.
What else have you learned from that journey?
Oh my gracious. So we could literally spend like a few hours talking about it, but essentially I think for me is that it allowed me the freedom to actually be who I really am. And I had spent a lot of my life feeling like it wasn't possible for me to actually go after what would make me happy. And I grew up in a pretty conservative sort of religious environment, and I didn't think it was possible for me to be open and honest about my own sexual orientation. And so getting out of my marriage actually allowed me some freedom to explore that, and I was able to meet the person I feel like I'm supposed to be with. And, you know, she's amazing, and we've been able to, you know, build a relationship around what feels like a much more authentic way of living because I'm not trying to force myself to be something I'm not.
I love that authenticity, and I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful for it.
So what other little nuggets would you like to share today? We've got just a few minutes left.
Oh, man. I feel like I could just go and go and go. That's sort of like, I joke, you give me a microphone, I'm pretty happy, and I could just keep talking for a while.
I know it. I know it.
But I guess I'll just give people a little bit of info into how they can kind of follow me should they want to. I think I mentioned in the first episode that I was on that I have a Therapy Thoughts workshop. It It rotates between the St. Charles and the Chesterfield locations of the Bike Stop Cafe once a month. And if you want to follow all of that journey, you can find me on Facebook. It's lindsaywalden.com/lindsaywaldenconsulting. Excuse me, facebook.com/lindsaywaldenconsulting or /lindsaywaldentherapy. Both of those you can follow me. I am on Instagram, Walden_Lindsay. And I have a website, lindsaywalden.com. I publish a weekly blog on various relationship and kind of living your best life topics. And then the Therapy Thoughts podcast is going to be relaunching soon. So just got a lot of ways that you can follow me and sort of connect. I am always open to discussing things, or if people have questions or they just want to kind of reach out and kind of know how to get in touch with me, that's the best way. You can also call my office, 314-485-9189.
So what are some of the topics coming up on your blog over the next...
Well, so I did actually a five episode or five blog series, whatever you want to call it, on the five love languages. So if you're curious about that, I've got lots of links to like go take the quiz and some examples of how those show up. I've done a number of them on desire discrepancy. I've got some coming up on boundaries, on how to set healthy boundaries in relationships. I've got one on grief coming up. Forgiveness is a big topic that's going to be coming up in the future. Just a lot of different ones, kind of trying to jump around from a variety of things. I'm also going to be talking a little bit about imago therapy, which is a form of approach that says we project images onto the people in our lives, and how do we kind of check that and make sure that we're not projecting an image that's unfair to them. So number of things coming up.
Oh, that is so interesting. If only I could just keep you in that chair for like another
week.
Okay,
well, I will come back. There you go. I will have to come back.
I love it. Well, this is Amanda LaPlante. You've been listening to Get Real to Heal. I want to again thank Lindsay Walden, LPC, Certified Sex Therapist and Life Coach and Business Media Consultant, for joining me today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. This was awesome.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. So Amanda LaPlante, Get Real to Heal. You're listening to us on KWRHLP 92.9 FM. For this and other episodes of Get Real to Heal, check us out on soundcloud.com/getrealtoheal. If you'd like to reach out to me, follow me on facebook.com/getrealtoheal or on Instagram @getrealtoheal. And you can also find me online at amandalaplante.com. And reach out to me anytime for a free consultation or with any questions about the show, 314-583-6749. Make it a great day.